Good, yeah, this is on parent-friendly elliptic curves. And the reference for this talk, in case you want to hear more about it afterwards or you want to zoom out during this talk and at the end realize, oh, I should have listened to it, this is the paper with David Freeman and Mike Scott, A Taxonomy on Parent-Friendly Elliptic Curves, which by now has 52 pages and we are done with it. The tech file has been sent off to the journal for good. It's going to appear in the Journal of Cryptology, but we kept updating the ePrint Archive report. So if you go there on the ePrint Archive, you find the 2009 version. The contents of that paper, so let's play with this a bit. So we want to leave that reference on. Yeah, that works. Good. I'm fascinated by this freezing. So yesterday I removed a lot of redundancy from my slides because I said, well, I can do this now. The contents of that paper is we describe all constructions of parent-friendly curves known to date and have developed a coherent framework so that if you have a construction, you can place that in the framework and know which papers to read around it. And we have found several new constructions with that improve on previous instructions, constructions. We talk about row values, which I will define later on. We have a construction to obtain something we call families, with that have good properties, that have a variable CM discriminant, as opposed to previous good constructions with fixed CM discriminant. And the paper contains a recommendation of curves for various security levels and performance requirements. And this talk, of course, is only a strict subset of the above. However, as this is a retrospective meeting, let's look at a few major achievements over the past 2.5 years. If we flick back to October 30, 2006, that was the first day of the workshop Computational Challenges Arising in Algorithmic Number Theory and Cryptography, which was part of that 4-month-long program here at the Fields Institute, to which we look back now. And the thing is, I missed that completely, although I was one of the organizers. For good reasons. On that day, I was able to take that picture of my 12-hour-old daughter being protected by her 3.5-year-old brother, Felix and Julia. 2.5 years later, on my son's 6th birthday, this is what you can achieve in 2.5 years. To put things into perspective, yeah, you can learn how to walk, to talk, to dress, undress yourself. As for my daughter, as for my son, you can learn how to speak Dutch on the top of German and English. You can learn how to read and spell and say oh and more and lots of other things. So I probably could go on like for hours just talking about these two pictures, but let's move on. So this is the actual talk. What is a parent-friendly curve? Parent-friendly is informally spoken an elliptic curve with a small embedding degree and a large prime order subgroup. An embedding degree, let's define that formally. We have an elliptic curve defined over a finite field and we assume that the number r, a large prime number r, divides the number of points on that curve. And let's assume these are co-prime, I and Q. And then the embedding degree is, well, choose one of the two definitions, whichever you like best, the smallest integer k such that FQ to the k contains all the R roots of unity. Or, it's, in other words, the smallest integer k such that R divides Q to the k minus 1. Leave that on. A few comments on that. If an elliptic curve has embedding degree k with respect to R, then we have the property that the R torsion group can be embedded into, or is embedded into the field, into the group of points on the extension field FQ to the k. And that's important because we have pairings, such as the Weyl pairing, that maps into this extension field, as Kate has already mentioned before. We have the property that if the elliptic curve happens to be supersingular, then we know that this embedding degree is bounded by 6. And that's the Fry-Rook attack or Menezes-Okamoto-Wenstone attack. Why are we interested in these pairings? Because they are building blocks for a host of exciting public key protocols. And they have been around now for almost 10 years, some of those protocols. But people are still getting excited and write more and more papers about that. And we do need these pairings a lot and will need them more in the future, since there are fun applications that you can't possibly do without them. And that includes short signatures or ID-based cryptography, group signatures, certificate-less cryptography. Yeah, Jenny! And what we need is that this embedding degree K needs to be small so that pairings are efficiently computable, because the pairing maps into FQ to the K. And if Q has 160 or more bits, and typically K is of the size of the range of R. Yeah? And R, we want to be that large prime order having 160 bits. So if we just take a random curve, FQ to the K is Q to the number that has 160 bits. So that's why we care about embedding degrees. And small embedding degrees are rare. As I said, for a random curve, expect that K has the size of R. But that doesn't mean that we can find, if we look long enough, that we find something with a small embedding degree. But the perspective for this is rather grim, because for a random curve, if we want to have the embedding degree bounded by something like log square Q, if we assume that we look for a curve that has a prime number of points, this probability is vanishingly small. And the paper by Koblitz and Balasubramanian give us an exact bound. I'll just give you an illustration. If you look at 160-bit prime, then the probability that K, the embedding degree, is less than 12,000 is less than 10 to the minus 28. And K about 12,000 is not enough for us. We like something like K to be less or equal than 50. And we look more like K equal 12, 10, 6, something like that. But yeah, even if you allow K equal to be 12,000, then forget about it, finding it just by doing exhaustive search through curves. So what is now formally a pairing-friendly curve? This notion has been lingering around in papers all the time. Curves suitable for pairings, whatever. It hasn't been really properly defined, let's say explicitly defined. So we've done that in our paper and just set in stone. This is what we call pairing-friendly. And pairing-friendly just means that we have that the largest prime order subgroup that we find in that curve is larger or equal than the square root of Q. And that's just a definition that we made up. And we say that the embedding degree of that curve is bounded by log R divided by 8. You might find this a bit random, yeah? Why use these? And here are two comments. It turns out that this bound is a bit of a point of turnover. Curves with embedding degree, with small embedding degree with respect to R, are quite abundant. We find them quite frequently. If R is that prime, large prime order subgroup has order less than square root of Q. Remember that result by Balasubramanian and Koblitz that I had quoted, that was R being approximately of the size of Q. So now we look at significantly smaller R. And they are quite rare if R is larger than square root of Q. And you find details in a paper by Luka and Spalinski in the Journal of Cryptology. We now define rho, the rho value of a curve, to be the ratio of the size of the field and the size of the largest prime order subgroup. So by our definition for parent-friendly curves, rho is bounded by 2, because we want that R is larger than the square root of Q. And there is a natural lower bound for R, which is due to the Hasse bound. Why do we have this bound on the embedding degree, that we say we want the embedding degree to be bounded by log R divided by 8? Well, varying degrees of practical interest in powering-based applications depend on what security level do I want, because you always have to balance the the hardness of the curve discrete logarithm problem and the hardness of the discrete log problem in the associated finite field extension. And we want them to be roughly of comparable difficulty. And this bound is log divided by 8 is chosen to roughly reflect the bounds on K that are given here. So here we are looking at the bit sizes of curve parameters and corresponding embedding degrees for commonly desired levels of security. And these security levels in bits, this is kind of the number of operations it takes to break a certain system. So, for instance, if you work with a discrete log problem on a prime order subgroup of 160 bits on an elliptic curve, it takes you roughly, using Pollard Road, 2 to the 80 steps. And that's also the security level that Skipjack, the symmetric cipher, provides. And the same is these other security levels match the three AES algorithms and triple disk. The subgroup size R is basically just twice as big, assuming you use Pollard Row in an elliptic curve group. And then the extension field size gives you a range of bits. And that depends on what your standard is on the efficiency of index calculus number sieve type algorithms. Some people are more on the conservative side and some people are more on the progressive side. So that's why we get a range of values for K that correspond to this security level. And then you get various embedding degrees. If you say I want to have something like prime order subgroup, you're looking at these values of K. And if you want to have something like R being closer to root of Q, then you get, of course, smaller embedding degrees. So this value log R divided by 8 just corresponds to those bounds on K. And that's why we choose this, because we say this is what we want in pairing based cryptographic applications. I doubt I have to say much more about the complex multiplication method. I missed yesterday's talks, but I understand that has been covered. The one thing I want to point out, I'm using here the CM norm equation with a positive CM discriminant. Yeah, so some people might find a sign change here. So in my talk, my CM discriminants are positive. And so for those who haven't been here yesterday, as an input, we have a finite field. We have a desired group order for the elliptic curve group. And we have, as an input, our discriminant. And that satisfies this CM norm equation. And as an output, we can construct an elliptic curve over FQ that has this number of points. And what we need now, I had to update that number, increasing it from 10 to the 10 to 10 to the 12 due to Drew's talk on Tuesday. We need still that D is relatively small. And this is very unlikely. If I take a random 160-bit Q and a random trace T, which is only bounded by root Q, because I can't expect that the square-free part of the expression on the left-hand side is satisfying such a bound for a random curve. So there is one more constraint coming in, because the only way for me to construct pairing-friendly curves so far is to use the CM method to construct that actual curve once I know which parameters to use. To construct pairing-friendly curves, we have the following theorem. An elliptic curve over FQ of embedding degree K with a subgroup of prime order R and trace T can be constructed if and only if, of course, Q is a prime or a prime power, because that's defining our field. And we want R to be prime. This is understood as well. We want that R divides the group order of the group of points on that elliptic curve. That's understood. R has to divide Q to the K minus 1. And R does not divide Q to the I minus 1. And that relates to the definition of embedding degree that requires me embedding degree k says it's k is the smallest number such that r divides q to the k minus 1. So this ensures embedding degree k. And lastly, we have the CM equation that is phi that actually allows us to construct the curve with these parameters. And if r does not divide k, which we can assume easily since you're looking for a large prime or r and a small k, then we can show that condition 4 is equivalent with saying that r divides the kth cyclotomic polynomial evaluated at t minus 1. So let's replace that one. And what we have done first in our paper is we have introduced the notion of a family. So far we only talk about individual elliptic curves, but we will find that in various constructions that we actually get families of curves. And a family is a set of polynomials R of x, t of x, q of x. They have rational coefficients at best. No, at worst. Rational coefficients at worst. I mean, we like to have integer coefficients since we work with integers, but rational is acceptable for us. And now we say we have a family. We define such a triple to be a family if we have the following definition satisfied on R, T, and Q. First of all, is the polynomial Q of X has to be either a power of a polynomial P of X or, it has to be a power, can be a trivial power of a polynomial P of X, and P of X represents primes. And that's another definition that we made in the paper that I did not include here. Basically, a polynomial representing primes means the polynomial is not prohibited to assume prime values. So a necessary condition for that is, for instance, that the polynomial is irreducible. If you have a reducible polynomial, you never get primes. And you want to have the polynomial to be monic. And you want to have the polynomial to assume integer values a few times. And then it means it assumes integer values infinitely many often. And you want that for every x such that the polynomial takes on an integer value, if you look at the collection of those polynomial values, they are coprime. So the GCD taken over all these integer values of that polynomial is equal to 1. And that allows you, that excludes you, for instance, that such a polynomial, whenever evaluated, has a factor 2 for every single number you evaluated. So we're basically representing primes means it can assume prime values. There is no guarantee that it will, but yeah, in practice it does. We want that the polynomial R of X is something close to representing primes. We have it slightly, we have a slight slack here since we don't assume that R of X, whatever it assumes an integer value, all these values have GCD 1. We can strip that off because we do allow a factor of R of X, which we then just strip off and say, well, we look for the prime order subgroup of that. So these two conditions just correspond to these two conditions here. Then we want that R of X divides the polynomial on the right-hand side, which is just translating the third criterion over here. We want that R of X divides the K cyclotomic polynomial evaluated at the polynomial T of X minus 1, just corresponding to this one over here. And lastly, we want to have the CM equation satisfied. And there, the key point is that this CM equation has to have infinitely many integer solutions. And that will guarantee us, potentially, that we get infinitely many Parry-friendly curves from that family. Yeah. D is, in the definition, fixed. Okay. Right, it's given. Yeah, so for a given K and a given D.
But again, Y depends on X.
Right, Y depends on X. And Y is only coming into place in the CM equation. The rationale, that's a very good point. The rationale behind this definition is the following. If I have a solution x naught y naught to this CM equation, where x naught has the property that the trace is an integer evaluated at x naught, and q of x naught is a prime or a prime power, then there does exist a Parry-friendly curve with embedding degree k and discriminant d. So this definition alone does not ensure that we have that every family of parent-friendly curves actually produces parent-friendly curves. But if these conditions are satisfied, especially the primality condition, which you, I mean, heuristically this always happens. Once you have a family, you get parent-friendly curves. But that's the motivation for this definition. Correspondingly, now we can define the row value of a family. We just replace the logs here by the degrees of the corresponding polynomials. Yeah. And you will see examples with d greater than 1. Actually, you will see an example now. How's that? Very famous example, widely used in practice. Actually, the Barreto-Nerysch curves form a family. You have these three polynomials, and I'm not telling you as yet how on earth does one come up with these polynomials. And this gives a family with embedding degree 12 and row value 1. See that R of x and Q of x have the same powers here with the same leading coefficients, which means we actually do get prime order elliptic curves once we get them. And they have CM discriminant 3. So this equation here, the CM equation, is satisfied with 3 not equal to 1, unless... you meant little d. I'm sorry. We have a family of supersingular curves that is defined over p squared. And that's in the paper. But that's the one example. Yeah. Other than that... Yeah. That's the one example. But, I mean, why should we exclude something in the definition if you have one example of a, say, supersingular curve? Sorry, I misunderstood your question. So here you have something. Here is an example of a family which nicely fits into this definition here. And we can split up our notion of a family into subcategories, because in fact this Barreto-Nerysch family is something that we call a complete family, because it has the feature that the CM equation is not just satisfied for individual values of y, but it holds with y being a polynomial depending on x. And that's a special property, which is a really nice property. And that we call a complete family. If we have such an equation, that means we get an abundance of parent-friendly curves, because we don't even have to worry about finding individual pairs, x not, y not, that satisfy the CM equation. Yeah, any will do. We have this specific polynomial. We have that polynomial y given specifically. So any x not will produce that. So we only have to worry about the primality of q of x and r of x, and we are done. Okay, let's keep this one. If we don't have such a representation with a polynomial on the right-hand side, we say that the family is what we call sparse. And that means the CM equation only has solutions for some set of x and y. And that set typically grows exponentially. And the most famous example of a sparse family are the so-called MNT curves due to Midaji, Nakabayashi, and Takano. And they cover embedding degrees 3, 4, and 6. And here for the case embedding degree 6, we get these polynomials here. Again, you see, since we have the same leading coefficients over here for r of x and q of x, the same powers as well, the same degrees here, we get prime order curves. So that's the family of row value 1 again. And it can be shown that solving the CM equation here is equivalent to solving the so-called MNT equation. And that's a generalized Pell equation. And those who ever looked at Pell equations quickly realized that the solutions to this are rather sparse. And that's where it comes from, let me say. We call that family sparse. If we don't have a polynomial over here, we have a hard time solving the CM equations, and we're not getting an abundance of curves. Okay, where am I here? So, back to complete families. We can further classify complete families, saying, and the classification of complete families depends on the properties of the number field Q of X over R of X. And typically, or in very many applications, R of X is a cyclotomic polynomial for some multiple of the embedding degree. We do need the property that we have the multiple of the embedding degree to ensure that the case rules of unity are in that number field. We need that. And if we have that this is a cyclotomic polynomial, and we have that the square root of the discriminant is also in that number field, then this family is called a cyclotomic family. And the first cyclotomic families, the systematic construction is due to Brazing and Wren, and Barrettelli and Scott have done lots of work in that as well. The difference in dates here is really just that DCC, the journal where this appeared, took a while to make that paper appear. So this really was developed independently, simultaneously. But I think Brin and Wang have to live with publication date 2005. Good. Sorry, I want to keep this one here. So we have cyclotomic families. On the other hand, we have sporadic families. And the difference between a sporadic family and a cyclotomic family is that the polynomial R of X is not a cyclotomic polynomial. And one example for this are the Barrett-Nerich curves. And here you will see the reason how did they come up with that polynomial R of X, that fourth degree polynomial starting with 36 X to the fourth. Because if you happen to plug in the polynomial 6x squared into the 12th cyclotomic polynomial, this otherwise irreducible polynomial factors. And this is something really rare. And that's why we call this sporadic. It only sporadically happens that you get a factorization of the cyclotomic polynomial if you plug in, if you do the right substitution. And Kashida, Schaeffer, and Scott have found more sporadic families by playing around with various cyclotomic polynomials and plugging in other, doing other substitutions. And independent of these two families, cyclotomic and sporadic families, we have, we ran out of names, Scott-Barreto families. And that's just one very specific construction where we say the number field is an extension of the cyclotomic field, but as opposed to the previous two constructions, the discriminant, the square root of the negative discriminant does not lie in that number field anymore. And that makes a big difference in constructing these curves, because this condition guarantees that we can just plug in the CM equation and we are, it helps us to solve the CM equation. While here, we don't have an algorithm to solve the CM equation, so the way these curves are constructed is that you just do a computer search and find solutions for the CM equation. So now, are we ready for this? That's our classification. If you got lost on the previous slide, this slide captures every single known construction so far. So we have these pairing-friendly curves, and we first do the step, we have families of curves, and we have curves that are not in families. So we have discussed pretty much everything on this side here. We have the sparse families, which have constructions by the MNT curves, embedding degrees 3, 4, and 6. We have Galbraith, McKee, and Valencia, who do almost prime order elliptic curves for these degrees 3, 4, and 6. And we have curves of embedding degree 10 of prime order due to David Freeman. Then we have the classification of complete families, where we have cyclotomic families, sporadic families, and Scott-Barreto families. And then on the other hand, we have curves not in families. And curves not in families, first we have the supersingular curves, which have a bounded embedding degree, and even if we, especially if you look at the prime field case, we only get embedding degree 2. So the interest in supersingular curves goes, and supersingular elliptic curves, goes down as our security levels increase. Because if you remember that slide back with that table, we typically already now look at embedding degree 12 as a preferred embedding degree over as opposed to 6. On the other hand, we have Cox-Pinch curves and Dupont-Engel-Morin curves. I will discuss Cox-Pinch curves in more detail next. These curves have the property that they have row values approximately 2. And that's the big difference that you get in these families here. The cyclotomic construction, and I'm giving the complete constructions here, give you embedding degree, give you a row value strictly less than 2. And you will see on one of the future slides why this is the case. So what's the big advantage over these families as opposed to individual curves? Any questions on this table? I will leave it up for a little while. So let's look at Cox-Pinch curves. This goes back to way back, the early days of pairing-friendly curves. But there is a good reason why I'm walking you through this. How do we construct the Cox-Pinch curve? We fix our embedding degree, and we choose a square-free discriminant. We take a prime so that k divides r minus 1. This guarantees that we find a primitive kth root of unity in the multiplicative group modulo r. And we take this prime so that minus v is a square modulo r. And this ensures that we find the root of minus d and, as said, the primitive kth root of unity in here. So that's nice. We do all our computations modulo r now. We define what's going to be the trace, and we define what's going to be that polynomial, or that value y satisfying the CM equation, and we just do it that it works well. We lift t prime and y prime to the integers modulo r. Or we lift them to an integer in the interval 0 r. We have some flexibility here. We can also lift this to any other range between on an interval of length r. And then we just let q to be equal to this value, which forces the CM equation to be satisfied. And then if that value q is an integer and a prime, we are done. We use the CM method to construct a curve with q plus 1 minus t points. So that's nice and simple. It works for all embedding degrees k. And it is, you have relative freedom to choose r and d. You have relative freedom to choose these two because you have just a few constraints here. And if you look at the values, t is some number modulo r, and y is a number mod r. So if I'm looking at what we get from q, so t and y are of order of magnitude r, q is of order of magnitude r squared, so automatically we can't expect rho values to be much different from 2. Yeah, that would be a real coincidence. If this rho value, approximately 2, is acceptable, one could say, forget about all the hassle with families and whatever, use Cox-Pinch, and that's the method of choice. Because you have this huge flexibility, in a comparatively large flexibility, in choosing your discriminant. Another reason why this Cox-Pinch construction is of so much value is because that's the construction underlying the construction of cyclotomic families, which gives us rho value strictly less than 2. And the reason we can already see from here why we get rho value strictly less than 2, as soon as we go to families, because then we have polynomials here. We have t as a polynomial and y as a polynomial. If we reduce these polynomials modulo the polynomial r of x, we get down in the degree by 1. So suddenly, these ratios, there is a significant difference. So q has a degree less than the degree of r squared. And therefore, we expect the rho value to be strictly less than q by construction, just by the mere fact that we work with polynomials as opposed to with integers. So that's why we get that rho value strictly less than 2. And the Cox-Pinch method has also been generalized to produce pairing-friendly abelian varieties if you look into higher genus curves. So that's nice, too. And that's why it's worth still studying the Cox-Pinch construction, even if you say, I need rho value less than 2. So now let's look at an example of a cyclotomic family. And that's the Brasing-Wren construction, which really can be now easily understood if you look, if you always refer back to Cox Pinch. And I kind of preserved the language, being a little bit sloppy here with the notation, so that we see the similarity. Because some people kind of back off and say, breathing rank, this is with cyclotomic fields, and oh no, this is way beyond me. No, it's not beyond you. At least it's not beyond me, yeah, so therefore it's not you. Oh, my children, right. So I'm using a toy example here, let K be equal to 5, embedding degree 5. And I'm choosing this cyclotomic polynomial phi of 20, which has degree 8. And I'm defining that number field, as I'm told, by the construction. So this is basically just equivalent to using the multiplicative group Z, RZ. And I find in that number field, I find, by construction, the fifth primitive root of unity. And I also find, I happen to find, the square root of minus 1. So I'm saying, okay, I'm using discriminant 1. Because I have that square root, that's convenient. In that number field, the fifth root of unity, the fifth primitive root of unity, can be represented as minus x squared. So using that the trace is simply theta k plus 1, I'm letting the trace polynomial be minus x squared plus 1. The square root of minus 1 in that number field represents as x to the fifth. So I'm using y as this ratio, how I'm computing y here, in that number field. And I'm using that the discriminant is minus 1. So I'm multiplying by the square root of minus 1, and that's why I get rid of the denominator in here. And if you do that multiplication properly, with using c of 5 to be minus x squared, you easily get that y of x is x to the 7 plus 5. And now I'm just evaluating q, and I get this polynomial here of degree 14, and I find this polynomial, hooray, is irreducible, and it does assume integer values for proper choices of x, and therefore this family R, T, and Q is a complete family of elliptic curves of embedding degree k equals 5. It has the CM discriminant 1, and the row value is just degree of Q divided by the degree of R. Good. Let's keep this one. The one downside of this construction and all the other constructions involving cyclotomic families or other families is that we have small discriminants. We choose a discriminant, and that discriminant typically is small. The only or the major constructions we know for cyclotomic families and the other complete families are 1 and 3. We have examples with d equal 2, and that's about it. Once in a while you see someone popping up with d equal 11. Great. And some people love such small d, especially, for instance, d equal 3 or d equal 1. For instance, d equal 3 has a sextet twist. And that's great if you want to implement pairings efficiently, because you can evaluate pairings. If the embedding degree is divisible by 6, you can speed up the pairing computation by evaluating them in, for instance, for embedding degree 12, you compute in FQ squared rather than in the full extension field. And similarly, with D equal 1, you can get speed ups using a quartic twist. But others may not like small discriminants. There is known a speed up for polar dual method using the same features of these small discriminants, and this is due to an algorithm due to Dorsmer, Gaudry, and Morang, and they decrease the security by a few bits. It's really just by a few bits, yeah. It does not kind of diminish the security significantly, but it might be a warning sign, yeah. We can do something using that extra structure, and people are sometimes very paranoid, some are, and some just say, hey, avoid extra structure wherever possible. There is that paper by Koblitz, Good and Bad Uses of Elliptic Curves in Cryptography, who is kind of the far end of being overly cautious, not overly, on the far end of being cautious, all parameters for a cryptosystem must always be chosen with the maximal possible degree of randomness. Because any extra structure or deviation from randomness might someday be used to an attack on the system. So we shouldn't be really focusing only on parent-friendly elliptic curves that have small discriminant. Let's do parent-friendly curves with variable discriminant. You only find the assumptions of the theorem here, not yet the statement, so don't look for this as yet. Let's talk about the assumptions. We start out with a family with embedding degree k and discriminant d. We define our number field, and we let this be a polynomial, we let y of x be a polynomial representation of that ratio here in that number field. And the biggest assumption in the theorem is that we assume R, T, and Q are even polynomials. And we assume that polynomial Y is an odd polynomial. Then we can do the following. We can replace every occurrence of X in that even degree polynomial, every occurrence of X squared in that even degree polynomial, we can replace that by X. And same in T and Q, and we can introduce new polynomials, T prime, Q prime, Y prime, and R prime, such that we have these representations. So that's the assumption on the polynomials. Now I'm considering all parameters alpha, which have these following properties. Alpha times V is square free, and if I'm plugging in alpha x squared in these new polynomials, then we get certain conditions. R prime alpha x squared is irreducible, same for q prime, and we want that y prime takes on integer values if I'm evaluating it at alpha times x squared. You find again the statement of the theorem here, the assumptions, and here's our statement. Then this new family, R prime, T prime, Q prime, evaluated at alpha x squared, is a complete family of elliptic curves with the same embedding degree and the same row value as our original family, but this family has discriminant alpha times d. Then we have a good freedom of choice for alpha. So we can move on from small discriminant families to a family with variable discriminant just using this parameter alpha. So this is nice. Let's look at our example. We do this with our construction of a cyclotomic family with embedding degree 5. Nice, we see R, T, and Y are all even polynomials. If you wondered what is an even polynomial, and I didn't dare to ask, sort of, what is an even polynomial? Excuse me. An even polynomial is a polynomial that has only even degrees. An odd polynomial is a polynomial that has only odd degrees. So here we see R, T, and Q are even, and Y is odd. Now, for any odd integer alpha, I define these new polynomials. So my polynomial R prime is basically the polynomial where every occurrence of x squared is replaced by x, and then I'm substituting x by alpha x squared. Or you can go directly from, say, r of x to r prime of alpha x squared by saying, well, every x is replaced by root alpha times x. And since we have an even polynomial, it works out and you have no roots appearing here. Same for t prime and q prime. And then this is a complete family, I'm claiming, with these properties. I haven't discussed these assumptions yet. I'm claiming this, so believe me, this is true. However, I have to make a few assumptions on alpha. Namely, so here, if I look at this polynomial, R prime of alpha x squared, it's basically just the 10th cyclotomic polynomial evaluated at alpha x squared. starting out with the 20th cyclotomic polynomial. That's just phi of 20x is the same as phi of 10x squared. So here, this is that. We have seen in the case of Baryton-Narish curves that phi 12 of 6 squared is reducible, and that was the key to the entire construction of these curves. So it does happen that these curves, that these polynomials are reducible. So how can we be sure, if I choose my alphas, that these polynomials are irreducible? Maybe I've just created a theorem about an empty set. But it can be remove this concern very easily. Namely, all what I need is that alpha that I'm substituting in here is a square-free integer that does not divide k. And then phi k of alpha x squared is irreducible. For everyone who tried to find similar constructions such as Baryton-Narish curves by doing exhaustive search evaluating some quadratic polynomials, you can be put at rest now and say, well, the only way this can work, that this construction is gives us a reducible polynomial, is if alpha divides the embedding degree. And right, so if you look back at phi of 12, the only substitutions with a quadratic polynomial that give us a factorization of phi of 12 is if I'm substituting by 6x squared or 2x squared, both of which, yeah, indeed happen to be divisors of 12. Nothing else will work. This theorem is just a very special case of a more general theorem, which says if I have an irreducible polynomial and I have a square-free integer that does not divide the least and highest coefficient times the discriminant of that polynomial, then f substituted at alpha x squared is irreducible. So all what we have to do in this construction is here, we have to evaluate, we have to find the discriminant of the polynomial q of x. And we find that 4 times the that polynomial has this particular discriminant, so I just have to avoid that alpha, which is also assumed to be odd, does not divide this number. For every other odd alpha, I get an elliptic curve that is parent-friendly, has the same embedding degree, rho equal 1.75, and gives me, an almost arbitrary choice of discriminant. So that's nice, I find. However, it's not that nice. Number one, you say, okay, yay, now let's go back to Baryton-Narish curves and let's do that. No. This is not an even polynomial. So the construction of variable discriminants just does not work for that one application we are the most interested in at the moment for various applications. The construction does work. We have examples working for all embedding degrees k, which, it can be expressed as a saying the greatest common divisor of k and 24 has to be in that set, or we say k is not congruent 0 mod 4, or divisible by 3 and not divisible by 8. And in addition, we can make it work for k equal 28 and 44, but not for k equal 20. This does not mean that we can improve the so-called current records for various embedding degrees that give us certain row values for families, because it can happen that the construction that currently gives us the best row value has polynomials for which our theorem does not apply. It just means we have, if you have an embedding degree that falls into the set here, that it works, we can improve on, we can give you a construction with variable discriminants that has row value strictly less than 2. What I've shown you, what we do is, what we have done originally, given such a family with a variable discriminant, you choose your alpha less than 10 to the 12 by now, and you vary x of the right size until you find that these two values, r prime of alpha x squared and q prime of alpha x squared, are both prime. That's the standard construction. You fix the discriminant, you choose the discriminant to be varied. That's not variable anymore, and then you vary your x until you get a right value. a completely symmetric and also working approach is you choose x first, even x equal to be 1, and then you vary alpha of the right size, meaning you want certain bit sizes of r prime and q prime of alpha x squared. And yeah, you do this, you vary alpha until you find values that are prime. And that has been done by Komuta, Kawazo, and Takahashi. The advantage of the second approach is that it works very well if these polynomials have a high degree. So we can handle, because if you have polynomials of high degree, that means if you vary your x a little bit, you might get a completely different bit range for your the number you obtain. If you do this approach, since the polynomial is only linear in alpha, it has half of a degree in alpha, here, you can deal with higher degree polynomials than you can have with the original approach. Okay, conclusion. We presented the complete classification of pairing-friendly elliptic curves with several explicit examples. So that was that tree that we saw. We presented a construction to obtain complete families of pairing-friendly curves of variable discriminant. We did not cover implementation issues, such as how to exploit twists and compression, how to exploit extension field arithmetic or low Hamming rate, which have at times a dramatic influence on which construction you're choosing. And you might say, I'm preferring a larger row value if I'm getting faster arithmetic throughout. And this has been treated, for instance, one source is Michael Scott's pairing 2007 paper. And this talk did also not cover the recommendations which construction to use for a given embedding degree. There are several tables in our paper that you can consult on that. And since it's almost time, we can go for lunch. If you what?
If they have a patent,
do they? Well, I'm taking back my recommendation to pay fees for that. I was not aware of that. Mathematically, this is the method of choice. I mean, Hitt's paper?
At the bottom. What's more important than FQ?
You
can kind of go to intermediate field, do bad things there.
Are you talking about lower Hitt's paper or?
No. When you want to, when you care about the MOV attack.
Yeah.
That's the embedding degree as people have considered before, meaning the smallest k for each order of group divided to the k minus 1. It could be replaced by the smallest k for each the order of group divided to the k minus 1.
I believe I know what you mean. In which case, in which case, my answer is that to the construction we present here, that work does not apply. But we should consult if we think about the same things. Yeah.
Also
Okay, I take that reference from you offline. Okay. Oh, I didn't mean that. Other than singular curves. Oopsie, let's talk about it. Turn it off.